Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
What is Dax, are you
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
The Hall of Famer Paul Molitor is here. We started the show, multiple segments on Bob Uecker, and a great guest to discuss Bob Uecker's Paul Molitor. Molly, like all our guests, is on the John Schuster Caldwell Banger Hotline. When Paul Molitor started playing for the Milwaukee Brewers in 1978, he was 21 when he left. After the 92 season, he was 35. He goes back to Milwaukee in 1999, has his number retired, and spent thousands and thousands of days around Bob Uecker, around a batting cage, on a plane, maybe at a hotel, maybe having a beverage, a dinner. So Paul is an excellent guest. Thank you, my friend. I appreciate it. My sympathies to you and the literally tens of thousands of people who knew Bob Uecker. When you first go to Milwaukee and you first start talking to him, what were your early impressions of Bob Uecker?
Well, good afternoon, Chad. Thank you for your, kind words. Yeah, I'm just fortunate to have known Uecker over the past 54 years, roughly. And, when I first got there in 1978, he was still probably only 6, 7, 8 years into his broadcasting career, and some of the other things hadn't taken off yet. But over that first handful of years that I was there, it started with the Carson stuff, and then, of course, the movie and the TV series and the Miller Lite commercials.
Yep.
And he just became bigger than anybody else in that clubhouse, Robin Yount or Raleigh Fingers, we flew a lot of commercial flights back then, and you could get stopped in the airport. We would not. It was always quite chaotic, but
right.
It just kind of happened, and it was so natural for him. I think about what it would be like to be a person when you are always expected to be funny, and if that would be stressful or hard, but it just seemed it was so natural for him, and it didn't matter the environment. And like you said, the mornings in spring training at 7:30 and having a cup of coffee and you cold in court in the morning and just, throwing batting practice every day and just all the things that he did. I think about the most famous sports figures in the history of the state of Wisconsin. You can go with the quarterbacks. You got Starr and Favre and Rogers, and then you got Lou Alcindor, and you got Al McGuire, and you got all these people. And far and away, I would say that Bob Uecker is at the top of that list.
That's an amazing statement. And you obviously lived it, and just as a broadcaster and us living so close, I can't argue with you. The times that even when I would see Bob here, the presence...
Sure.
He would have all the time, from media types to other players to fans. Just amazing. I'm glad you mentioned BP. I mean, I can't think of another broadcaster who for decades was throwing BP, right? And Yeah, just talk about that connection that he had as a former player, as a broadcaster, but also still kind of one of you guys when he's trying to help everybody out.
Yeah, he was like one of the guys, and what was amazing, he was like one of the guys up through last season. You know, you could see the way of these current generation players still connected to him and how they wanted him to be a part of their, you know, celebrations when they made the postseason and whatever it might be. But, you know, it was the same every day. You know, I was in a hitting group with Robin Yount and Cecil Cooper, and Bob Uecker was our guy. He'd put on his number one Brewer jersey. And I think that the fact that him and Bud go way back.
Yes.
You know, Bud hired him first after his celebrated playing career. He hired him as a scout, and it just didn't work out very well.
Right.
And sure enough, eventually he got a spot in that booth. And you know, it wasn't his comedy that made him famous in the broadcast booth. He was a great caller of the games. He
100%.
Knew when to be funny.
Yes.
He knew when to be funny. And when the game got out of hand, you know, you're glad
Stories.
You were Bob Uecker on the call. Yeah, no doubt about it.
100%. I was making that point. Even the last 5-10 years, you know, my father has a place out there in St. Croix. And sure. I could pick up a Brewer signal a lot easier out there than I could kind of west where the two of us live. And I would be determined at least 5-6 times a summer, if I was out there, whether it was during the day, on a weekend or night, I would listen. And, Paul, I listened half dozen times this year, and he
right.
still had his fastball. Could you hear that he was a little older? Yeah, but barely. You know,
well,
and he could be, if you didn't know he was Mr. Baseball, Mr. Belvedere, Carson, Harry Doyle, the Miller Lite. You just listen to him as a
right.
play-by-play guy. You'd say, this guy's good. And then he had everything else.
And the fact that he was able to do it all the way up through last year, I know his games had been cut down and his travel had cut down. But, you know, he always talked about, you know, regardless of the movies and the Carson and everything else that we've mentioned, it was always back to baseball. And he had chances to leave Milwaukee. He had a, you know, special affinity for Bud and for that franchise. And, yeah, it just was spectacular. I was down there, well, it was probably 3 or 4 years ago when they had the 50th anniversary Bob Uecker season.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And we sat up there in the booth the whole game, and it was just entertaining from first pitch to the last call, you know.
Yeah.
And that was also the night, by the way, when he threw out the first pitch, they had this covered veil on some item on the pitching mound when he walked out there, and we all thought they were going to have a bust or a statue, and he had a pitching machine. And so when it was time to throw out the first pitch, he just stuck the ball into the machine. So
this is
pretty unique.
Yeah,
pretty
this unique. Is great stuff. And we're talking all-time Wisconsin athletes. This guy's on the list, too. This is Paul Mahler. One of the greatest hitters in the game's history. And, you know, he had great days here with the Twins. He had great days with the Blue Jays. But the core of his baseball life with the Brewers from the age of 21 to 35, retired number right. with Brewers, and just, you know, decades with Bob Uecker. But let's talk about Bud Selig a little bit, because you referred to him a few times. Just
sure.
that friendship between the two, and also – two guys who just loved the city of Milwaukee.
Well, I think they were hand in hand as far as their passion for, you know, bringing baseball back to Milwaukee after the Braves had left, and the fact that they kind of got into it at the same time. They both turned 90 last year. In fact, the last time I saw Uke was at Bud's 90th birthday party this past summer. And so, yeah, through the highs and lows, those guys have kind of seen it all together and made their friendship very special. You know, Hank Aaron was kind of a part of that group too for a long
for sure.
time until we lost Hank. So you think about, you know, the owner of the Brewers and his tenure as commissioner and Uke's tremendous run as a broadcaster highlighted by the Ford Frick Award, I think back in 2003. And oh yeah, you have the home run champion of all time in there too. So
yeah. Wow.
pretty good legacy for that trio.
For people who don't get what the Brewers mean to Milwaukee, can you talk about that, and how is it similar or how is it different what the Twins mean to the Twin Cities?
Yeah, I don't know exactly the best way to describe it. I think Euchre having a voice throughout that state is part of the reason that the popularity of that franchise goes all around the borders of that particular state. You know, and when they lost the Packers, as far as they used to play three games at County Stadium every year, and they went up to Green Bay. So, yes, you have Packer fans in Milwaukee, obviously, but the Brewers kind of were their team. The Bucks had their run way back when they had Oscar Robertson and Al Sinner way back when, but they went through a long drought until they won the championship a couple of years ago. I just think that here you would probably say the Vikings are the number one team in the state.
For sure.
But I would say the Brewers are the number one team in the state of Wisconsin.
This is Paul Molitor just giving us great, great stuff on the passing of Bob Euchre, who leaves us at 90, 54 years broadcasting Brewers. He actually broadcast the Braves for a couple of years after Bud had hired him as a scout, and it didn't work out, and Bob leaves us with this remarkable career. So when you're there and he's starting to get bigger and bigger, we looked it up, 62 appearances on Carson, the Miller Lite commercials, the TV show, Major League. Is he any different during this? Does he change at all to you guys?
He never changed in terms of his presence and how he carried himself. Whether it was, you know, pregame on the field, in the clubhouse, on the planes, whatever it was. I think it became a little bit challenging at times when it was at its peak as far as the public travel. But he always was, you know, very gracious and found a way to make people smile or laugh or whatever the moment took. But I think there was a period where that it almost got to be a little bit overwhelming for him. But I think he learned how to balance that the longer that period of time went on.
Some broadcasting news here in town. Somebody you've known for a long, long time, Roy Smalley.
Yeah.
After a great run, calling Twins games. Every time I watch Roy, I learn something new. And I think he's been massively undervalued as a telecaster. He is stepping away. Two things. What do you want to say about Roy and just his impact with the Twins? Because you look back at Roy's career, Roy was a hell of a player. I mean,
he was a great player.
Really, really good player. And then to be a part of the organization for this long. And then are you coming back this year in this similar role to what you did last year working with Chris Atterbury?
Well, as far as Roy is concerned, I wasn't aware of it until I saw it this morning, like a lot of people. And I'm with you on probably underrated and underappreciated a little bit as far as what he brought to those broadcasts. I think the Twins have kind of gone through that period now where they do rotate, you know, the color guys on the radio and the television, but it was always a treat for me to sit back and listen to Roy. He does have great insight. He knew the game. I thought he was able to break it down and make it understandable for even the casual fan. And, he left a really good mark in what he was able to do in that industry. I'm grateful the Twins have asked me to come back and do, I think probably going to be around 30 games again this year with
Nice.
Chris. And, with Dan Gladden having cut back last year, I think to about 100 games, I think it's going to be about that same number this year. And I think between myself and Glenn Perkins, and I'm not sure if other people, but we'll try to cover those 60 games that Dan will be out.
I'm also hearing some reports that you alone are going to buy the Twins. Can you, that your offer was $2 billion cash. Can you confirm that?
I'm right in the mix. You know, I'm just kind of waiting for the word. You know, I don't know where it's going to go, Chad. But this is going to be crazy. You know, after 40 years.
Yeah.
I'm not sure exactly of all the in-depth reasons of the Pollad's choice, but I'm sure they were solid, and hopefully it bodes well for the future of the Twins organization.
I know this isn't an easy day for you, and it's just been hours. So I value our friendship, and I really appreciate you coming on. Because your stories were just gold. Thank you, my friend.
Appreciate it. Yeah. Thanks, Chad. Have a good day, man.
Paul Molitor, hell of a baseball player, and he's just a great person. He is a great human being. Of course, you just want to go right away to, you know, the Correa.
I wasn't going to say anything.
You're going to go to the Correa play a couple of years ago in the playoffs when every one of us, except for you, were just bragging about it, that you call it out, and that we get on Molly, like, during the show, and Molly goes, you know, got to tell you the truth. I don't think Carlos made the right play on that one. And you go, that's what I said.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, you dismissed me.
And then you slammed your hands down on the table, knocked us off the air.
That was a different time.
That was a different time.
He was just the start, all right? Jim Pete, you know, a lot of great sports minds, no matter the sport, have agreed with my take that you, frankly, have dismissed. And
so we're truly underappreciating you.
I think so.
Constantly.
It would be nice if you'd just listen to me and realize the genius that you get to behold every single day.
Let's not forget the numerous politicos who've texted me how much they enjoy. Yeah. Am I wrong?
Don't forget
that. Do they text you, overrated, ask, Major yeah. Garrett? Nope. Which segment do they enjoy most?
Am I wrong?
Thank you. Hit the button and then pat yourself on the back and separate your shoulder.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
For sure. And if we're playing music tied to euchre, got to play this.
Absolutely.
Have to. John Marty, longtime senator. Hey, the Senate, they're actually functioning.
That's nice.
What a novel concept.
Yeah, they all showed up.
So we'll talk a little bit, excuse me, John Marty, about the dysfunction, but more importantly, sports betting. He's not a fan. And we'll talk about that. So why don't we talk a little bit of Vikings, since we talked with Paul Molitor, who was just a 10 on Bob Uecker. Not a 9, not an 8, a 10 on Bob Uecker. Just another reminder, Molly, great ball player, great human, and great broadcaster. So KOC, I don't know if he's still talking or just finished. So he's got 1 year left to go on his deal. And you had the Jay Glazer report. I think it was the day of the Vikings-Lions game where Jay Glazer, the outstanding journalist, scoop artist for Fox, reports that teams have reached out and are trying to take the temperature if they could trade for Kevin O'Connell. Kevin O'Connell, in year 3, signed a 4-year deal, hasn't signed an extension. The Wilfs normally wait to the last year before they sign extension, and I put out right away, because I think teams are interested in Kevin O'Connell, and my tweet was, I'm interested in winning the Masters. You know, the idea it's not going to happen. That the Wilfs, Ziggy and Mark look at him like more glowingly than they look at their own children, that no way they're going to trade. Now, you still have, is it 5 jobs left? Because Vrabel's with the Patriots. And KOC right now is 1 year left on his deal. And I'm assuming there's a 95% chance fairly soon they're going to announce a deal with O'Connell and maybe concurrently with Kwesi. But let's say O'Connell says to them, Dave, you know what? I'm going to play it out. He could. He's not worried about like blowing out his ACL like a player would.
No, look at Finchie.
That's true. Maybe that's what's going on with the Wolves. Ever since Mike Conley mm-hmm. went after him.
It's the Conley curse.
And now Finchie's bench Conley, so it's all coming back, right? What if O'Connell says, I love it here, but you know what I'm going to do? I like free agency too. And so I'm going to coach this year. I'm going to coach every day hard, but I'm going to take the pulse. I'm going to see what's going on. First of all, if you're Kevin O'Connell, is that a good idea?
No.
You don't think it's a good idea?
No.
Because you're worried you're going to have a disastrous year this year with the Vikings, and then your value isn't as high?
Value could tank, and even if your value is high, you're going to go to a bad team.
Yeah, but you don't know who's up for grabs next year. What if the Chiefs win their 4th straight Super Bowl? And Andy Reid steps away, and they now free agent Kevin O'Connell's right there, and Patrick Mahomes is saying, I want KOC. Most of the time, you're right, bad jobs. Most of the time. I think it's kind of tempting for O'Connell to say, now he could say, the Wolves love me.
Mm-hmm.
I am loved in this state. Not quite as loved as he was 2 weeks ago, but still fairly loved. I've got a kid quarterback who I believe in, and I can keep him. I think it'd be intoxicating. Now, here's the other part of the argument. What if he says that? And I don't think this is going to happen. I think there's still a 95% chance they're going to announce a four-year extension for a lot of money.
Higher than 95.
Yeah. But then if O'Connell would say to them, I'm going to wait. Why don't we wait? Then they have to trade him, don't they? If he says that to him, I love you guys, but why don't we just all wait till after this year and then we'll sign a deal. If he said that to them, don't they have to get on the horn with those five teams and say, what do you want to give us for him?
I think there has to be conversations.
Yeah. Now, again, I think the chances of that are very, very small. The chances of Lindsay ever dating you and marrying you are very, very small, and she did.
Miracles happen.
Miracles happen. This would be – they're better off with Kevin O'Connell than the mystery duo. John Gruden got two first-round picks and $8 million. What if the Jets gave you two first-round picks and Sauce Gardner? And you make Brian Flores your head coach.
B-Flow.
Get the seventh pick in the draft. They're going to stink next year because they always stink.
Mm-hmm.
You get maybe the best cornerback in football. And you might have watched a future legend walk out the door. You're going to take O'Connell, but if he doesn't sign, then they would have to trade him.
You wouldn't have to, but it becomes much more enticing. Well, and that ridiculous deal you just offered would be very enticing.
What part of that deal is ridiculous?
Giving that much for a coach.
25 years ago, that's what the Raiders received from the Buccaneers for Gruden.
25 years ago.
It should be more now. So you're saying the Jets, that clown show of an organization forever, isn't capable of utter stupidity?
Okay, make a great point.
John Marty next. Over the last couple years, we've had a number of representatives and state senators who have touted sports gambling, feeling like the time was right to legalize it. We've included the audience many times. So it made sense, since the state Senate, they're acting like adults, unlike what's taking place in the House, to have a state senator on who views it differently. I've interviewed John Marty a number of times over the years, but I do not believe we talked sports gambling before. And as I bring John in the conversation, I'll read a quote. Gambling and addiction is as powerful as any opioid or other addiction. That's what John Marty said recently. He adds this. There have been over 30 legislative hearings on sports betting bills in the last several years. They've all focused on the mechanics of the bills, understandably. Also, who profits from the bills, whether it's the tribes or the tracks, who or whom. No hearings have been focused on the harms, the economic harms, the social harms, the health harms because of it. Why do you believe you need to be that person to provide that part of the story, sir? And thank you very much for coming.
Sure. Glad to be with you, Chad. It's something that, as I said, with all those hearings, we've spent almost no time talking about the hardship of this. And there's already a lot of documentation worldwide over the years about the addictive nature of online betting, and that's a huge concern. In effect, right now in Minnesota and three of the four surrounding states, there's no online sports betting. Only Iowa has online sports betting allowed. And realistically, I think that when we talk about, there's been all this talk, oh, this is going to bring all this new money into the state, and I'm looking at all the additional costs, the mental health, the suicide prevention, the economic harm to people. And so to me, I wanted to make sure we had three new academic studies from last summer. One of them talked about escalation of domestic violence in states that have brought in sports betting. And there have been two others that talked about the economic harms and a huge rise in bankruptcy statewide rise in bankruptcy filings, which is actually a small number of people who have the addiction, but it's huge impact on that. So I wanted to make sure that before legislators vote to legalize something, that we ought to be talking about the harm as well.
So, John, tell people what you've done so far and what you plan on continuing to do with this session.
Sure. Well, first of all, the authors of the sports betting bill are continuing to push their bills. I want to make sure that if Minnesota adopts it, that we have some strong safeguards. I think no state, including the existing bills in Minnesota, have in them put safeguards in to stop the growth of it. Some of the states that have legalized sports betting have found that calls to their gambling hotlines, including states like New Jersey, where there's always been a lot of gambling, a lot of casinos, a lot of other things. They've had, like some of those states, a tripling of calls to their gambling hotlines. And I want to make sure that we address that, not just funding for those programs, but do everything we can to reduce the impact, the number of people who get addicted.
Okay, if that happens, if there is a significant money dedicated to building up these resources, to making them available at a much higher rate, and that's included in the bill, would you sign off and agree and vote in favor of legalizing sports betting in Minnesota?
Only if there are a number of other protections as well. I mean, what we found out, the industry always says, well, there's already a very big offshore illegal gambling, online gambling market, and there is. But they claim, oh, this will displace that, and we'll have more regulated stuff. Well, Massachusetts allowed sports bookmaking a couple years ago, and they found out it actually drove up the number of offshore betting people in the state because of the fact that as you make it eligible, if you're a 16-year-old, you can't gamble in Minnesota. You wouldn't be able to gamble on if we legalize sports betting. And if they're betting offshore, it's not like they're going to say, oh, now we can bet here. Oh, no, we're too young for that. So we're going to stop betting offshore. No, it actually has the opposite impact because of all the advertising. People get hooked on gambling, and it's an industry. My concern is, and Chad, you know, the thing I think we should say, first of all, is sports betting is currently legal in Minnesota. If you wanted to bet on the Vikings game this week, you could have. You can bet with friends. You can bet with strangers. You can bet with anything. The only thing that's not legal in Minnesota is sports bookmaking. You cannot have a company that comes in and tries to profit by arranging the bets for you. So to me, I mean, I think the Vikings would all be a risky bet no matter which side you're on that. But you know, you can
that's
bet anytime.
True.
You can with friends, strangers, anybody. And to me, when we bring in an industry that's going to profit off of this and they encourage people to do it, that's where we see the high risk. Last year, we successfully put on the sports betting bill, we put a restriction on prop bets. And that the industry just blew a gasket. Said, oh, this would just destroy the whole thing. We'd cut it in half. Well, it's because the people who prop betting is something that's really highly addictive. It drives people to an addiction level. And to me, when gambling addiction causes more suicides than any other type of addiction, it seems to me that we got to take a look at all these other concerns. And so, yeah, I've said I actually introduced a sports betting bill that put in the protections I want to see in there. If we do that, I said I'm willing to support it. If we don't do that, I think we should say Minnesota should learn from other states. And one other thing, they always say how popular it is. Well,
yep.
Missouri last year, they spent millions and millions of bucks promoting a sports betting thing, and it squeaked by less than 1% margin. It squeaked by. It did pass. California, 2 years earlier, they had two initiatives, most expensive voter initiatives in the country ever. It was $400 million on the two initiatives. The online sports betting failed 81% of the vote. I mean, it was just overwhelming. If it's that popular, then maybe the voters would be saying different things. But to me, I think a lot of people, hey, I want to be able to bet on something. And I kind of feel adults ought to be able to do what they want.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just worried that there's an addiction industry here behind it. Yeah.
Okay, let me jump in and remind folks, this is State Senator John Marty. Among the areas where he's involved, he's talking about sports gambling here. He recently gaveled in the Senate Finance Committee. That's why this is important to him he personally cares about it, and it's also part of his responsibility. When we talk about the addiction, there's no doubt, John. There is no doubt that some people will go down the wrong way. the comeback that a lot of people will make is if that we talk about other areas where addiction is possible. We could talk about alcohol. We could talk about cigarettes. We now have marijuana. If the apparatus ever gets set up by the Walz administration, I'm putting the over-under on that in about 30 years. If that ever gets done, so the libertarians will say, give us this opportunity, have the money set up to help these folks, but instead of just the two of us striking up a bet, or my producer and I striking up a bet, let's have it within the state, let the state prosper from it, and let's just include it. Instead of it being behind the scenes, make it out front and let states profit. It's not going to solve all our budgetary issues, but if it can drive more money to help us out, let's be adults and do that.
Right. And to that, a couple of responses. First of all, as chair of the Finance Committee and the one that has to put together a state budget, everybody's been talking about how much money this is going to bring in. The bill they had at the end of last year gave virtually no money. None of the tax revenue from sports betting was going to the state. Some was going to the tracks and the tribes and other gambling operations, but virtually nothing was going to the state. So I'm concerned about the higher state expenses for mental health in the schools and stuff like that, addiction work. All of that stuff costs a lot of money, and the bills are not providing money. So I'm worried about the cost to it. And the second thing about it is that this is so much a thing where if we put the safeguards in, as I said, I'm willing to do it, but they don't want to put the safeguards in because it won't make as much money off of it. And to me, that's the issue we have to look at. It is very serious, and it's huge numbers of people who do it. The studies have always shown, in this latest one showing about how many more bankruptcies states have after they legalize it, they said there was a 25 or 30% increase in bankruptcies. And I know even in the states with the most gambling problems, there's going to be 5% of the population or so who have addiction. But that 5%, so many of them go off the deep end with this because the industry, they prey on them. They actually have, if you're a big bettor, even if you don't have a lot of money, the industry knows how much you have because they have to file all these things. They keep close track.
Yep.
They give you a VIP treatment, and they hire a concierge who will come in, and right when you haven't bet for a couple of days because you had a big loss or something, they'll come in and offer you more free bets. They offer you prizes. In other words, they're courting the people who are most at risk of falling off the table.
Let me jump in, John, because you're making good points. You're making points that people right now are embracing through our text, and others are detesting. You know that's a part of the process.
Right.
You mentioned with the Senate Finance Committee, well, I need to ask you, the governor unveils his budget today, and one of the key parts is lowering Minnesota's sales tax for the first time in state history. It would be lowered by 0.075% across the board, while also expanding some previously excluded services. Senator John Marty thinks what of this proposal?
I think it's worth looking at. I think it's very much. The governor, as he said when he proposed his budget, and today is the first day we've seen it, he said that this is the first step in the process, and I agree. I mean, I got colleagues of both parties in the Senate and the House, if they ever get organized. We have all those folks are going to be having their say in it, too. And I'd take it the way the governor said. It's the first proposal out there. We're going to all respond to it. I think expanding it and cutting the rate may make some sense, but we'll be talking with colleagues and debating it across the aisle and internally in the Senate and in the House.
Speaking of the House, you guys are functioning. The House is not. Your fellow Democrats in the House took the oath Sunday in secret. They, because of a fellow Democrat who shouldn't have been running for a seat and found out he was not eligible, it's 67-66. The Democrats and Secretary of State Simon are saying, guess what, it's not a quorum. The Republicans are saying it absolutely is. They have questioned whether they even seat Brad Tapke after this judicial decision. Lisa Damith is acting like, hey, once I'm the Speaker, I'm not giving it up. What bothers you most about what's happened in the House, including are you bothered by the fact your fellow Democrats are not showing up for work?
I'm glad to say the one thing I can say here is in a bicameral system, House and Senate are different, and I'm really proud to be part of the Senate and really pleased that we came up with a bipartisan agreement. And I think that says a lot. And I do hope again, now the House stuff is all in the courts and everything else. I very much hope that regardless of the courts, that both parties work together and come up with an agreement. It's not easy to do, and both parties want everything they can get for what they think is fair. But I'm just pleased the Senate did a better job at that, and I hope the House can do so soon because we got a lot of work ahead of us.
I want to give you credit to the Senate, but I do want to follow up. Do you think your fellow Democrats should be at work today?
I've talked to some, and I know they are working very hard. They're meeting with constituents and so on. And I understand both the I don't care to get into the House's stuff because I'm just disappointed that both parties cannot work out a deal. And I understand both parties think the other one's doing it wrong. But I'm glad they're working on trying to do it. I hope we have an agreement in the next few days. The Senate had to fight those out. I was involved in the negotiations. I'm very pleased both the Republicans and DFLers worked together. I hope the House can do the same.
John, thanks for your time. I appreciate it, sir.
Good to talk to you, Chad. Take care.
State Senator John Marty. Let's pause right here and get your feedback. What do you think? You can talk about the budget, too. You can talk, go back to the House, the Democrats, Republicans. We've talked about that a lot. But most of the conversation was about sports betting. Do you agree with what John said? Do you agree that there needs to be a notable amount of money allocated for folks who are prone to addiction, who will face that? Are you more of the kind? Look at the money that you can bring in. Although, I think he's right. I don't think it's quite as much money as a lot of people suggest. But I also think on this one, I'm fairly libertarian, and I think we should be allowed to make these decisions. Dave doesn't see it that way. We can chime in, but we'd like you to also give us a call. Give us a text. 651-461-9226. Okay, why is Dave Harrigan against sports gambling in Minnesota, a person who thoroughly enjoys sports?
I do and thoroughly enjoy sports, and I used to be like you, very libertarian on the topic when the push started to legalize sports betting and have all the companies come in. Yeah, fine, sure, it doesn't really impact me. I don't think I'll make a whole lot of bets. I don't now. But I've flipped. I've absolutely flipped in everything I've heard and read when as the discussions have happened over the years, just talking about the predatory nature of these companies and how easy it is to get hooked. And, you know, it's one thing to make a bet on a game. It's one thing to make a bet on a few games a weekend. But, you know, now with the proliferation of all the betting content from not only the companies, from ESPN, who's all in it, from Fox Sports, who's
teams,
all in it. Yes,
leagues.
Teams. Everybody is pushing, pushing, pushing. And the fact that you can make, you know, bets one after another in game, you know, just boom,
that's
boom,
where
boom,
we're
boom.
Going.
Yeah, I lost. I got to make that money back. I lost again. Got to double it up. Let's go. I think it's a bad thing. I just think it's far too predatory and far too many people are going to suffer if it's fully legal.
You make a lot of points, and I'll admit I waffle more than I did before, but I still am libertarian. I still am. I think people need to calm down on how much money it's really going to bring in. I think we lie on marijuana and others, and I don't think we just because other people do it, we have to legalize everything. Like mushrooms – to benefit people's mental health, yes. LSD, hell no. That's just my personal views. I can draw lines. I still believe this is one where, yes, you're going to have folks who are going to be prone to the downside. But if that's our purity test, we're going to start eliminating a lot of things. We just are. And these folks are more aggressive, but I still think we should have the option. Two of us could go back and forth more, but let's just include some texts. A lot of people are chiming in. Somebody says sports betting isn't as bad as the advertising for sports betting. Man, it's everywhere.
Yes.
It is everywhere. Texter, totally just with Marty. How does he feel about destroying Canterbury? I love the sport, family-oriented, run by good families and its big lawyers. Casinos collect the money. We go to Iowa every week to play sports bet. How sad. Yeah, what has happened to Canterbury really pisses me off. It really does because it is an industry filled with good people, and we will cater. We will crawl. Some part because we have to with the tribes, but others. Here's a business that is functioning, is employing a lot of people on a regular basis, and we dismiss it too much. And Canterbury should be treated with much more respect than it is. More text. Now, here's on the last part. And he totally dodged it. He answered all the other questions. He was good. But here's a couple texts. John Marty's partisanship comes through yet again when he can't answer a simple question of whether or not members of his party should show up. Let's see, another of them. Marty, yes or no? Dang, these politicians dodge the question if their party is being criticized. It's not just John Marty. It's not just Democrats, but it's Republicans too. And that's just a no-brainer. That's where John Marty should say, to me, yes, my party should show up. And he can also add, and Lisa Damoth should give up the speakership after 3 weeks. But yes, my fellow Democrats should show up because that's the truth.